This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Recently in The Atlantic, Derek Thompson wrote a piece called The Everything is Weird Economy. Don't you feel it? The stories don't make sense. Or maybe they kind of do on Tuesday, but not so much on Wednesday. You've got horrible inflation, especially gas prices, but now those are trending down, and consumer spending is actually a little better than expected. You've got fears of a serious downturn, but one of the main indicators of recession is low unemployment, and that's the opposite, extremely opposite. A large part of the public is negative about the economy, but a large part of that part says we're doing fine. The indicators aren't serving us. Economy-wise, everything is weird. So we're devoting this hour to grappling with that weirdness. Let's begin.
In today's Money Watch, we're talking about how to prepare for a potential recession. With inflation at a 40-year high, many experts warn of a possible economic slowdown.
The big question mark largely centered around early 2023. You know, what happens with inflation? What happens with rates then? Are we in a recession?
Inflation, rate hikes, and market uncertainty are deepening recession fears. But Americans want to know when we will see some relief.
The New Yorker's John Cassidy recently outlined three factors causing economists to perhaps preemptively sing the blues. One, manufacturing output, or how much stuff we're making.
Data out today from the Philly Fed, this is a regional indicator of Mid-Atlantic region manufacturing activity, showed in July a contraction for the second straight month.
Speculation as to what the Batman of fiscal forces is up to, the Federal Reserve.
Rarely has the Federal Reserve been under such a microscope. The question this morning, how much will the Fed raise interest rates as it tries to bring 40-year high inflation under control?
And consumer sentiment, how the public feels about it all.
A CNBC poll reveals 81% of adults say they think the economy is likely to experience a recession this year.
That gloomy assessment of the economy as a whole often diverges from how people across the board see their own finances. I asked John Cassidy, why?
I think in this case, personal incomes have actually held up very well throughout the pandemic, partly because of the three stimulus packages that Congress passed. That's starting to run down now, but people still have, we're talking general terms, obviously it doesn't apply to everybody, some people are doing terribly, but in general terms, people still have higher savings and higher incomes than they had a year or two ago. So if you ask them how personally you're doing, they may well say, I'm doing well. But then they see prices going up, you know, for staples like gasoline, like food, like rent. And they say, you know, this is a bad economy.
And not for no reason. Low-income families are spending 30% of after-tax income on food and gas.
Economists often describe inflation as a regressive tax because it hits people on low incomes hardest.
Now, there's a close correlation between consumer confidence and the gas price. You say that's strange to economists, and yet not to an average person.
Well, economists would say, you know, gas prices are important, but they're not the biggest component of people's spending. The biggest item in most people's personal budgets is their rent or mortgage checks. Now, they've gone up quite a lot as well, but nowhere near as much as the price of energy, which has gone up nearly 100% over the last year.
So if these things are making people feel pessimistic, that has a huge impact on the economy, right?
I mean, it certainly has an impact on the reporting about the economy and how people feel about the economy, but it's not quite clear how much impact it has on consumer spending. Because one of the big sort of divergences we've seen this year is as consumer sentiment has collapsed, actual spending in the economy has held up pretty well. This week, we've had the big banks, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, the biggest banks in the country, reporting their quarterly results. And they've got enormous amounts of data on how people are spending because they all have big private label credit cards and debit cards. So they can track spending on a day-to-day basis like the government can't really. Now, what they reported in their earnings is that actually their customers still seem to be spending as much as ever, indeed more than ever.
So you can see why this is so confusing, right?
Yeah.
Polls say that people are feeling really bad and they're feeling a real pinch, but spending is up. The employment numbers are very strong, and yet there's so much gloom and doom. And how do you reconcile that?
It's funny, in this country, we don't really use the term, but in the UK, where they're having very similar inflation problem at the moment, all the coverage is in terms of what they call a cost of living crisis. And if you think of it in terms of cost of living, it's very simple to sort of see why people would be in a funk because of inflation.
Your second concern is manufacturing output, which has been falling. Why does that matter so much? I mean, how seriously did it fall? Don't we really spend most of our money on the service economy?
Yes, we do. Economists tend to think that manufacturing is what they call a leading indicator, so that if things are turning down, you'd see it first in manufacturing. And we have seen that over the last couple of months. Manufacturing growth turned negative a few months ago, and it was negative last month as well. Not a big fall, but it's obviously a turnaround. So some economists would say, well, that is going to eventually going to spread to the service sector, because manufacturing is usually driven by firms perceiving what the future demand is going to be. So if they think demand's going to fall, they're going to cut back, make fewer widgets, make fewer pieces of furniture, etc. And that's what we've started to see in some areas. You're also seeing it a bit in the tech sector. Companies like Microsoft and Amazon, Apple, huge employers now, have announced that they're going to cut down on hiring or introduce hiring freezes in certain areas. But we shouldn't emphasize it too much, because really the core of the economy now is services. Services accounts for more than 2/3, I think about 70% of overall spending in the economy. And that's really what drives the economy up and down. And so far, the service sector has held up pretty well.
So the third is the Federal Reserve, which is and will continue raising interest rates, making it tougher to borrow. And I guess that puts a big crimp on the housing market. What else do I need to know about the Fed?
An economist would tell you the Fed is the most important factor of all, because over history, in most cases, what has driven the American economy into recession since the Second World War is the Federal Reserve. Not every time. We had a sort of financial crisis in 2008.
Yeah, I remember.
And we had the start of the pandemic in 2020. So the last two recessions this doesn't apply to, but just set them aside for a minute. The rest, almost all the other recessions since the Second World War, have been caused by the Federal Reserve raising interest rates to bring down inflation or because of other financial concerns. The Fed raising interest rates hits the economy, you know, very directly in a couple of ways. First of all, the way that monetary policy works these days, it always leads to a big fall in the stock market and financial markets, because they're forward-looking. So as soon as the Fed announces that it's going to start raising rates, you see the stock market falling and you see other interest rates backing up.
If the stock market drops, people who have pensions wrapped up in there, that sort of thing, it isn't just a playground for rich people. It mostly is.
It's crazily lopsided, the stock market. But having said that, there are still, you know, tens of millions of people have 401k plans, and they look at that and see it going down, and that does tend to impact spending a bit. The other thing is the impact of interest rates on things like mortgage rates and car loans. You're already seeing that. The housing market has already had a crazy bubble-like burn over the last couple of years in terms of house prices. They're now finally starting to come down a bit because of higher mortgage rates. Mortgage rates have basically gone up from like 3% to over 5% in the last few months, so it's just a lot more expensive to buy a new house. So basically, to get back to your question, the Federal Reserve can sort of just set the overall weather in the economy by moving interest rates around. And it's taken a conscious decision because of its attitude to inflation, and it wants to bring it back down towards its target of 2%, then it's going to make the weather worse in the economy over the next year or so.
If it still works. I mean, Derek Thompson, writing in The Atlantic, posited the idea that the Fed may have lost its magic touch, that it's like an irritated parent driving while the kids in the back are kicking up a fuss, and dad starts with gentle warnings, stop it back there, and they don't work. So ultimately he says, don't make me turn this car around.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. The pandemic has sort of scrambled a lot of things in the economy, but I think ultimately we've had the very high inflation figure, 9.1%, highest since 1981. if that trend doesn't turn around, the Federal Reserve will keep raising interest rates, which I think could bring about a recession. So you've got a very cloudy picture here.
Oh, it's very clear. Demand is up, prices are up, jobs are up. Wages are down because of inflation. Consumer sentiment is very squirrely, and recession is right around the corner, despite a cavalcade of contradictions.
Yeah, well, I'd agree with everything you said there, apart from the last one. Recession is right around the corner. We're not sure about it yet.
I mean, just 44% of economists think that.
Yeah, 44%. That made a change since last month. But, you know, probably the most famous American economist of the 20th century, Paul Samuelson, said the stock market has predicted 9 of the last 5 recessions, I think.
Okay, so what is a recession other than 2 quarters of negative GDP? And what exactly is GDP?
A recession is an extended downturn in the economy overall. So what does that mean in terms of specific statistics? It's got to translate into a downturn in employment and a downturn in spending over an extended period. Now, next week, we'll see what the GDP figures are. It's conceivable that the GDP could have been negative in the second quarter as well as the first quarter, which, as you say, on the sort of rule of thumb, would be considered a recession. But there are some special technical factors in play here, which I won't go into in great detail. But
maybe you should. And I think it starts with the letter I, inventories. The GDP basically counts all spending in the economy, right?
All production and spending in the economy. And when a big manufacturer adds a bunch of new products to its inventory, that's counted in GDP. But actually, it hasn't sold yet. It's just sat there on the shelves. Now, what we've seen in the last couple of quarters is that because firms are worried about the future, they've been cutting back on their inventory investment, making less stuff to sit around because they're worried it won't sell eventually. So you've seen negative contribution to GDP from inventories.
But I had heard that they were floating in inventory because of the supply chain issues earlier on, delayed stuff from coming, and now it's all sitting there. They're awash in it.
Right. So they are awash in it, so that's why they cut back. The Gap is a good example. I think they've had a lot of trouble in the last couple of quarters making products which didn't sell very well. So those inventories, when they were made, were counted as part of GDP, maybe last year, third quarter, whenever they, I don't know when they manufacture them. But they've had to sell them off cheap, and they don't then order as many clothes inventories for the new quarter. And that translates into a negative impact on GDP, even though overall spending may not have fallen. So inventory accumulation and inventory decumulation in a situation like this can drive GDP negative, even though overall spending in the economy may still be positive.
So it's a misleading indicator.
It is a misleading indicator, yes.
Is there an equivalent to the canary in the coal mine when it comes to recession? Or is that what we've been talking about? Except
well,
the canaries actually live or die. It's clear.
Well, there's not a reliable canary. We'll know the economy is in recession if there's a big downturn in employment and spending. So if we see them falling substantially, then you will know that we're in a recession. But we haven't seen that so far, and we'll just have to wait and see.
I guess my final question is, if those two big indicators are actually still rising, why is there so much worry? Is it all about inflation?
I think it is all about inflation, or largely about inflation, yes. We haven't experienced this sort of inflation since the early 1980s. So unless you're 50 or older, you basically don't have any memory of this sort of thing. And I think it's come as a big shock to everyone because economists and the Federal Reserve and everybody else thought we were basically in a low inflation permanent situation. So seeing gas prices go up 100% in a year, seeing energy prices and food prices particularly going up very sharply, I think has come as a big shock to people. I mean, all the polling and consumer surveys shows that.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Sorry it's a bit complicated, but that's the world we live in.
That's why we called you. John Cassidy writes on economics for The New Yorker. Coming up, jobs, gas, and the search for reliable indicators. This is On the Media.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo. Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.